A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's a former YouTuber who used to shoot on a Canon XA40, proper pro camcorder, but when his son Ezra was born, he instinctively reached for his phone, a OnePlus Nord 3 5G, not a flagship. And he was genuinely blown away by what he was getting out of it. The depth of field, the clarity, and most importantly, the fact that when you're chasing newborn angles, a phone just moves the way your hand moves. The only place it falls apart is low light. So he's asking, is there a small form factor dedicated device that captures what makes the phone great, that ergonomic ease, but handles the dark better? And he specifically suspects those little gimbal cameras might not be the answer. Also, he doesn't need audio, which he correctly points out changes the equation. Knowing what you don't need narrows the field.
This is such a well-framed question because it's not just what camera should I buy. It's about the gap between where smartphones win and where they hit a wall, and whether anything small enough to actually use with a newborn fills that gap. And the fact that he's coming from a Canon XA40, that's a proper camcorder, 1-inch sensor, 20x optical zoom, XLR inputs, the whole thing, and he's choosing a mid-range phone over it. That tells you everything about where the friction is.
The XA40 is sitting in a bag somewhere feeling betrayed.
But the phone earned that spot honestly, so let's map the tensions here. There are really three. 1. Image quality versus ergonomics. 2. A dedicated tool versus a Swiss Army knife that also does email and Slack. 3. What you gain versus what you lose when the pro gear stays home. And the unspoken fourth tension is that the phone is actually good now, so the bar for a dedicated device to be worth carrying is higher than it's ever been.
The phone has to be not just beaten, but beaten by enough margin to justify the friction of a second object in your life.
And with a newborn, friction is everything. You're running on no sleep, the baby does something magical at 2 in the morning, and you have roughly 4 seconds to capture it before the moment evaporates. If your dedicated camera is in another room, or the battery is dead, or you have to futz with a lens cap, you've already lost.
Let's start with why the OnePlus Nord 3 is as good as it is, because understanding where it wins helps us understand what a challenger needs to beat. What's actually inside that phone?
The Nord 3 uses a Sony IMX890 sensor. It's a 1 over 1.56 inch sensor, 50 megapixels, but in normal shooting it pixel bends down to about 12.5 megapixels with an effective pixel size of 2 microns. That's solid for a phone. In good light, the dynamic range is excellent, the color science on OnePlus has gotten much better, and the multi-frame computational photography, where it's grabbing several exposures and merging them, produces impressive results.
That's what Daniel's seeing. The depth of field and clarity he mentioned. In decent light, the computational pipeline is doing heavy lifting, and the results look like they came from a much larger sensor.
But the moment the lights go down, the physics reassert themselves. The sensor's surface area is fixed. Each pixel is a tiny bucket catching photons, and when there aren't many photons to catch, you hit the limits of what the bucket can hold. The Nord 3 sensor has roughly 8.5 by 11.5 millimeters of surface area. That's about 1/7 the area of a full-frame sensor, so in low light, it's starving for light.
The computational tricks that save it instills don't work for video.
That's the key distinction. Night mode on a phone works by taking multiple long exposures and aligning them. You can do a 3-second exposure handheld because the phone is aligning frames computationally. But video requires a minimum of 24 frames per second. You can't do a 3-second exposure per frame. You'd get a slideshow. So video in low light forces the sensor to work at high ISO with whatever light it can grab in 1/24th or 1/30th of a second, and that's where the noise creeps in and the detail falls apart.
Daniel's experience is exactly what the physics predicts. Good light, phone looks magical. Nursery at 2 a.m. with a salt lamp, phone looks like security footage.
The salt lamp is a specific challenge because it's a single-point warm light source. It creates deep shadows, and the phone's sensor just doesn't have the dynamic range in video mode to hold detail in both the lit areas and the shadows. A larger sensor can.
What about the gimbal cameras? The DJI Pocket 3 and its ilk? That's the category most people point to when someone says, small, dedicated, better than a phone.
The DJI Pocket 3 is impressive hardware. It's got a 1-inch sensor that's roughly 4 times the surface area of the Nord 3 sensor, and it shoots 4K at up to 120 frames per second. It's stabilized on a 3-axis gimbal, so your footage looks like it's floating, and the low-light performance is noticeably better than a mid-range phone. The lens is a fixed 20mm equivalent at f2. 20mm is wide. It's the kind of focal length where you have to be close to your subject to fill the frame, and that creates two problems for baby documentation specifically. 1. You're shoving a camera in a newborn's face, which is intrusive and weird. 2. Wide-angle lenses create perspective distortion up close. Noses look larger, proportions get exaggerated. It's not flattering.
The baby looks like a Picasso.
And the other issue is, there's no viewfinder. You're composing on a screen, which means you're still having a screen-mediated experience of your child rather than looking at your child. For some people that matters, for others it doesn't. But Daniel specifically mentioned he misses a dedicated device because it's a dedicated tool. There's something about the intentionality of a camera versus a phone that he's responding to. The Pocket 3, despite being a dedicated device, still feels screen-first.
The screen on the Pocket 3 is tiny. You're squinting at a 2-inch display while your baby does something unrepeatable.
There's also the Insta360 GO3S, which is even smaller. It's basically a thumb-sized magnetic camera that you can stick anywhere. It shoots 4K, it's waterproof, it's adorable. But the sensor is tiny, 1 over 2.3 inches, even smaller than the Nord 3's sensor. So you're gaining clever mounting options and losing sensor performance. It's a lateral move at best for low light.
The gimbal category solves the stabilization problem brilliantly, and the form factor problem partially, but introduces the wide-angle problem and doesn't solve the low-light problem decisively enough. What about the compact camera category? The Sony ZB-1-2, the Canon PowerShot G7X Mark III. These are the vlogging cameras that everyone seemed to forget about when phones got good.
This is where it gets interesting. The Sony ZV-1-2 is a 1-inch sensor compact with an 18-50mm equivalent zoom lens, f/1.8 at the wide end but dropping to f/4.0 at the tele end. It weighs 292 grams, that's lighter than most phones with a case. It's got Sony's excellent autofocus, including eye tracking that works on humans and animals, and it's designed specifically for handheld video. The built-in microphone is actually good, though Daniel said he doesn't need audio, so that's a bonus feature he can ignore.
That lens 4.08 to 4.0, that's the catch, isn't it?
That's the catch. When you're shooting wide at 18mm, f1.8 is respectably fast. But the moment you zoom in even slightly to get a more flattering focal length, say 35 or 50mm for a portrait-like look, the aperture has already closed down significantly. At 50mm, you're probably around f3.5 or f3.0, which means you're losing 2 full stops of light compared to f1. In a dim nursery, that's the difference between a usable ISO of 1600 and a noisy ISO of 6400.
You're back in phone territory.
You're back in phone territory, but with a better sensor and worse computational processing. It's a wash. The Canon G7X Mark III has a similar problem. 1-inch sensor, 24 to 100mm equivalent at f/1.8 to f/2.28, which is actually a bit better at the tele end, but the autofocus is dated and there's no viewfinder. And the PowerShot V10 that Canon released is basically a vlogging toy, 1-inch sensor, fixed 19mm lens. Same wide-angle problem as the DJI Pocket 3.
The compact zoom category is a bunch of compromises that don't quite line up with the specific use case. What about fixed-lens compacts with bigger sensors?
Now we're talking. The Ricoh GR30 X. This is a camera that fits in a jeans pocket, has an APS-C sensor that's 23.5 by 15.6 millimeters, roughly 3.5 times the surface area of the Nord 3 sensor, and a 40mm equivalent f2. The image quality is stunning. At ISO 6400 in a dim living room, it produces clean, detailed images that a phone can't touch. The color rendering is beautiful. The lens is sharp corner to corner.
I can hear the butt forming.
The video is an afterthought. It shoots 1080p only. The stabilization for video is digital and not great. The autofocus in video mode hunts. The Ricoh GR series is a photographer's camera. It's built for stills, and the video features are there because the spec sheet required them, not because anyone at Ricoh cared about video. So if Daniel wants a hybrid photo-video device, the GR Thar-X is a non-starter for the video hack.
That's the recurring theme here. Every device that's small enough nails one thing and whiffs on the other. The phone does everything okay, but nothing great. The gimbal cameras stabilize brilliantly, but can't zoom. The compact zoom, but gets slow. The Pocket APS. C cameras have gorgeous sensors, but forget video exists.
It's the no free lunch principle of camera design. Sensor size, lens speed, zoom range, body size. You can optimize for three of those four, maybe, but you can't have all four. Physics doesn't allow it.
Where does that leave us? Is there anything that gets close?
I think the answer involves reframing the question. Instead of looking for one device that does everything, what about a two-device workflow where the phone handles the grab-and-go moments, and a compact, dedicated camera handles the intentional shooting? And in that second category, there's a device that's been quietly getting better and better, the Sony ZV-E10 series.
The ZV-E10 is an interchangeable lens camera. That's already bigger than what Daniel's describing.
It is, but hear me out. The ZV-E10 Mark II, which came out in mid-2024, has an APS-C sensor, shoots 4K at 60 frames per second with proper oversampling, has Sony's active stabilization, which is good now, and the body weighs about 377 grams. Pair it with the Sigma 16mm f1.4 or the Sigma 23mm f1.4, both fast primes, and you've got a setup that weighs around 540 grams total.
For context, the Canon XA40 weighs about 900 grams, so we're talking roughly half the weight of Daniel's old camcorder.
It fits in a small sling bag. More importantly, an f/1.4 lens on an APS-C sensor in a dim nursery is capturing roughly 8 to 10 times more light than the Nord 3 sensor at the same shutter speed. That's not a marginal improvement. That's the difference between unusable noise and a clean, emotionally resonant image.
You're back to interchangeable lenses, which is a whole thing. Multiple lenses, lens caps, decisions.
That's the trade-off. But Daniel's specific constraint, not needing audio, is actually liberating here. Cameras like the ZV-E10 are marketed partly on their microphone inputs and audio features. If you don't care about any of that, you can ignore a whole dimension of the spec sheet and just focus on sensor and lens. The Sigma 16mm f1.4 is roughly $300 used, and it lives on the camera. You never take it off. You treat the setup as a fixed lens camera that happens to be technically interchangeable.
That's a mindset shift. Buy an interchangeable lens camera and then pretend it's not.
And there's another angle here that I think is underexplored. The phone as viewfinder workflow. Most dedicated cameras now have companion apps, Sony Imaging Edge, Canon Camera Connect, that let you use your phone as a wireless monitor and remote control. So you can have the camera on a small tripod or in one hand, and your phone in the other hand showing you exactly what the camera sees. You get the sensor quality of the dedicated camera with the ergonomics of phone-based shooting.
That's clever. You're decoupling the sensor from the viewfinder.
It changes the shooting experience. Instead of holding a camera to your face, which can feel formal and intrusive with a baby, you're holding your phone at a natural angle while the actual camera is off to the side capturing the image. The baby doesn't know they're being photographed by a big sensor. They just see you looking at your phone, which in 2026 is the most normal thing in the world.
The baby thinks you're checking Slack.
Meanwhile, you're capturing an APS-C RAW file that you can print at 18 by 24.
Let's get practical. If someone listening is in Daniel's position, they love their phone for baby documentation. They've hit the low-light wall, and they want a dedicated device that's small enough to actually use. What's the decision framework?
I'd start with three questions. One, are you primarily shooting photos, video, or a genuine 50-50 split? Two, are you mostly indoors in dim light or outdoors in good light? Three, what's your actual tolerance for carrying a second device? Be honest with yourself.
Question 3 is the one everyone lies about.
Everyone lies about question 3. They buy the camera, they carry it for 2 weeks, and then it lives on a shelf, so let's be realistic. If your tolerance for a second device is 0, if you know you'll never carry anything beyond your phone, then the answer is keep using your phone and accept the low light limitations. Maybe invest in better lighting in the nursery. A small LED panel with adjustable color temperature costs $50 and does more for your image quality than any camera upgrade.
That's the unsexy answer. That's probably correct for most people.
Daniel specifically said he misses having a dedicated tool, so his tolerance isn't 0. For someone like that, the next tier is, if you're video first and shoot mostly in decent light, the DJI Pocket 3 is the best small form factor device despite the wide-angle limitation. The stabilization is transformative for baby footage. You can follow a crawling baby, and the footage looks like it was shot on a Steadicam. The 1-inch sensor handles moderate low light better than a phone, and it's pocketable.
If you're photo-versed or need genuine low-light performance,
then you're looking at the Ricoh GR Thri-X for pure photo, accepting that video is a bonus feature at best. Or you're looking at the Sony ZV-E10 Mark II with a fast prime lens as a hybrid solution, accepting that it's bigger than a pocket but smaller than a traditional camcorder. And between those, the ZV-E10 is the more versatile choice for someone who wants both photos and video.
What about the Sony ZV-1 II as a single device compromise?
It's the closest thing to a do-it-all small camera for parent documentation, but with the significant caveat that the lens gets slow when you zoom. If you can live at the wide end, 18mm at f/1.8, it's a solid performer. The autofocus is excellent, the video features are purpose-built for handheld shooting, and it's truly pocketable. But you're back to the wide-angle perspective distortion issue. It's a set of trade-offs that some people will be fine with, and others won't.
There's a study that came out last year from USC's Annenberg School that found parents using dedicated cameras captured about 40% fewer total moments, but rated the moments they did capture as 3 times more emotionally significant on a 7-point scale. That feels relevant here.
It's extremely relevant. The friction of a dedicated device changes your behavior. You shoot less, but you're more present for what you do shoot. The phone encourages volume. Thousands of nearly identical photos, most of which you'll never look at again. The dedicated camera encourages selectivity. And there's something about the physical act of raising a viewfinder to your eye that signals to your brain, this moment matters.
The intentionality gap. The phone is the everything machine, so using it for photography doesn't feel like a choice. The camera is a choice.
With a newborn, the moments that matter are unpredictable and fleeting. You can't set up lighting. You can't pose the baby. You're capturing what's actually happening in whatever light happens to be there. That's why low-light performance isn't a luxury spec. It's the spec that determines whether you get the shot or you don't.
Let's talk about what Daniel specifically said at the end. Knowing what you don't need helps you find a better solution. He doesn't need audio. What does that unlock?
It unlocks a whole category of cameras that reviewers ding for having no mic input or a bad internal microphone, but that have excellent sensors and lenses. The Ricoh GR Thri-X is a perfect example. Reviewers complain about the video features and the lack of mic input, but if you're stripping audio from your footage anyway, none of that matters. You're left with a pocketable APS-C camera with a gorgeous lens. The criticism becomes irrelevant to your use case.
It's like shopping for a car when you don't need back seats. Suddenly, two-seaters are on the table.
And in the camera world, the market is so driven by vloggers that audio features dominate the conversation. If you can ignore all of that, you can find overlooked gems. The Fujifilm X-M5, for instance, APS-C sensor, compact body, Fuji's excellent film simulations for photos, decent 4K video, no viewfinder but a tilting screen. Reviewers complained about the lack of a headphone jack. For Daniel's use case, that complaint is meaningless.
The field narrows to, what has the best sensor and lens combination in the smallest body, ignoring audio entirely?
Ignoring zoom range to some extent, because if you're documenting a baby in your home, you're typically within 6 to 10 feet of your subject. You don't need a 24 to 200 millimeter zoom. A fast prime in the 23 to 40 millimeter equivalent range covers almost everything.
Let's get into the weeds on sensor physics for a minute, because I think it helps explain why this is such a hard problem. Why can't someone just make a phone-sized camera with a big sensor and a fast lens?
Because of the flange focal distance. In a phone, the lens sits almost directly on top of the sensor. There's maybe 5 or 6 millimeters of distance. That works because the sensor is tiny and the lens elements are correspondingly tiny. When you scale up to a 1-inch sensor, the lens has to be larger and farther from the sensor to project a sharp image circle that covers the whole sensor. When you scale up to APS-C, it's larger still. You can't cheat physics here. The lens has to be a certain size and a certain distance from the sensor to produce a quality image.
The thickness of the device is fundamentally constrained by the sensor size.
That's why the Ricoh GR Thi-X is as small as APS-C gets. The lens retracts into the body when the camera is off, and even then the camera is about 33 millimeters thick. A phone is 7 or 8 millimeters thick. You can't close that gap without shrinking the sensor or compromising the lens.
What about the rumored 1-inch sensor phones? The OnePlus 13 is supposedly getting a Sony LYT900 1-inch sensor. Does that close the gap?
It narrows it significantly for stills. A 1-inch sensor in a phone, combined with computational photography, can produce results that rival dedicated cameras in many conditions. But for video, the computational advantages diminish because, as we discussed, you can't stack multiple long exposures when you need 24 or 30 frames per second. And the lens on a phone, even with a 1-inch sensor, is still a tiny plastic lens with limited light-gathering ability compared to even a modest dedicated camera lens.
The gap narrows, but doesn't close.
The gap narrows for photos in moderate light. It remains significant for video in low light. And I think that will be true for at least the next 3 to 5 years, even with AI denoising and frame interpolation getting better. The physics of photon collection is unforgiving.
Let's circle back to something Daniel said that I think is worth dwelling on. He was blown away by the quality he was getting from a mid-range phone. Not a flagship, not a phone marketed on its camera, a OnePlus Nord 3. And he loves using it.
It matters enormously. The best camera is the one you have with you, but the second best camera is the one that makes you want to pick it up. If the Nord 3 brings him joy and produces images he's happy with in most conditions, the dedicated camera doesn't need to replace it. It needs to complement it. It needs to be the thing he reaches for when the light is challenging or when he wants to be more intentional about the shot.
It's not phone versus camera. It's phone and camera.
The camera earns its place by doing what the phone can't, not by trying to do everything the phone does. That's the key insight. Don't look for a phone replacement. Look for a phone supplement. Something that handles the 20% of situations where the phone falls short and stays out of the way for the other 80%.
Which brings us to a practical recommendation. If Daniel were sitting here and said, "Just tell me what to buy," what would you say?
I'd say if you want one device that's small enough to always have with you and handles both photos and video competently, get the DJI Pocket 3 and learn to work with the wide-angle lens. The stabilization alone will transform your video footage, and the 1-inch sensor is a real step up from the Nord 3 in low light. Except that you'll be close to your subject and that the perspective will be wide-angle.
If he's willing to carry a small bag.
If he's willing to carry a small sling bag. Get the Sony ZV-E10 Mark II with the Sigma 23mm f/1. Set it up once, never take the lens off, and treat it as a fixed lens camera. Use the phone as a wireless monitor when you want to shoot from odd angles. The image quality will be dramatically better than the phone in every lighting condition, and the shooting experience will feel intentional without being cumbersome.
If he wants the smallest possible device that still takes better photos than his phone, accepting that video is secondary.
Ricoh GR30X. It's the size of a deck of cards, the APS-C sensor is spectacular, the 40mm equivalent lens is flattering for portraits, and the image quality at high ISO will make him forget his phone exists for photography. Just don't expect much from the video.
Three paths, depending on what he's willing to trade off.
None of them are the wrong choice. They're just different choices about which trade-offs you can live with. The important thing is that Daniel already did the hard part. He identified exactly what he needs and what he doesn't. That's more than most people ever do.
There's a broader point here about the state of camera technology in 2026. We're in this strange moment where phones have gotten so good that they've eaten the bottom and middle of the camera market entirely. The only cameras left are the ones that do something phones physically cannot do, and that category is shrinking.
It's shrinking, but it's also clarifying. The cameras that survive are the ones with large sensors, fast lenses, and specialized capabilities. Everything else has been absorbed into the phone. And for someone like Daniel, who's coming from a pro camcorder background, that's actually helpful. The market has been simplified by the phone's dominance. You're not choosing between 50 nearly identical point-and-shoots anymore. You're choosing between a handful of devices that each have a clear reason to exist.
The phone killed the mediocre camera and left the interesting ones standing.
The interesting ones are more interesting than ever. The DJI Pocket 3 is a gimbal-stabilized 1-inch sensor that fits in a pocket that didn't exist 5 years ago. The Ricoh GR3iX is an APS-C sensor in a body smaller than most point and shoots from a decade ago. The Sony ZV-E10 II shoots 4K60 with autofocus that would have cost $10,000 a decade ago in a body that weighs less than 400 grams. These are remarkable devices.
The TL Dr. And I know you hate TL Dr. Z. Is that the perfect device doesn't exist, but several very good imperfect devices do, and which one is right depends on whether you prioritize size, low-light performance, or video capability. The phone remains the best grab-and-go option, and the phone, as viewfinder trick, is worth trying regardless of which dedicated camera you choose.
If all else fails, buy a better lamp for the nursery. $50, instant low-light improvement, no sensor physics required.
The leaf medicine approach to photography.
I don't think that's what leaf medicine means.
It's ancestral wisdom. Sloths have been optimizing nursery lighting for millennia.
Sloths didn't have nurseries. Sloths hang from trees.
We had tree nurseries. Low light was never an issue because we were already in the canopy, filtering the dappled sunlight through the leaves. The original diffused lighting setup.
I'm going to move on before this becomes a whole thing. The open question I'm left with is whether the next generation of smartphone sensors, these 1-inch sensors that are starting to appear in flagship phones, will finally close the low-light video gap. The Sony LYT900 is already in some devices, and the computational videography pipeline is improving fast. Frame interpolation, AI denoising, temporal noise reduction, these are getting better every year. It's possible that in 3 to 5 years, the dedicated camera for parent documentation becomes obsolete for everyone except the most demanding users.
For now, the gap is real. And for someone who notices it, someone like Daniel, who has the eye to see where his phone falls short, a dedicated device still earns its place.
The fact that he loves his phone makes the recommendation easier, not harder. He's not trying to replace something he hates. He's trying to supplement something he loves for the situations where it struggles. That's the healthiest relationship with gear I can imagine.
The best camera is the one you have with you. The second best is the one that fills the gaps the first one leaves. And the third best is the one you bought because a YouTube reviewer told you to, and now it sits in a drawer.
We've all got that drawer.
Of course we do. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1930s, Tuvalu's first postage stamps were designed under the assumption that the island nation's primary export would be phosphates. The stamps prominently featured mining imagery and the slogan, Fossil Wealth of the Pacific. No significant phosphate deposits were ever found on Tuvalu. The stamps remained in circulation for 6 years before being quietly redesigned.
The fossil wealth was the stamps themselves.
I have so many questions, and I know none of them have answers. This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. If you've got a camera setup that's working for you, or a drawer full of gear that isn't, we'd love to hear about it. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.